What's up, nerd clan? This episode of the Potterverse, of course, is brought to you by MinuteWithMary.com. But what in the world is MinuteWithMary.com? Well, it's your one-stop shop for all things beauty and skincare. And I gotta tell you, I'm doing something really, really fun right now. It's all about like transitioning into fall beauty. It's adding a little bit of color if, like myself, you turn into a family member of the Cullen family this time of year. For all my Twilight fans out there.
Say it.
Like literally all of my flush and cute freckles and everything just like sink back within my skin and I am translucent as Edward Cullen, possibly Casper. So if like me, you're like, you know, I'm looking a wee bit peaky. I want to learn how to maybe contour, where I should add blush, what eye colors make mine truly pop, since that's the only part of my face you get to see nowadays. Thank you, masks and COVID-19. I got you, boo. Okay. All you need to do is go to my marvelous VIP group on Facebook. Search the hashtag Minute with Mary. Request to join my marvelous VIP group. I'm doing a completely free fall beauty basics class. And if you're not on the FB, but you're on the IG, you know what I'm talking about, Instagram, search hashtag Minute with Mary. I got you covered there too. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film series of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners and let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Hi, everybody. How's it going? My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and if I turned into a cat, that's it. That's the end. I'm done.
Oh, I think I'd be done because like life would be so great.
Imagine all the hair that you would have in your mouth.
Imagine all the naps you could take.
You know what? True. You know what, Mary?
There you go. What? Makes me wanna shout. I'm a mom in 2020. That's all I want for Christmas.
So much melatonin and Doritos.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, of course, this chapter is not about melatonin or naps. It's about the Polyjuice potion. And there's no napping going on in this chapter for anybody. Mm-mm. Things are going crazy.
Well, except for Crabbe and Goyle. They napped.
Oh, you know? We should do a perspective from one of them.
I was thinking about it. Yeah, just snoring.
Pinching his nose, Harry drank the potion down in two large gulps. It tasted like overcooked cabbage. And all my Polish friends out there, we all know what that tastes
the
like.
The Poles are down with the overcooked cabbage.
Razukiewicz. That's my Polish name. If anyone else there is a Razukiewicz, hey, check it out. Overcooked cabbage, you know what's up. Immediately, his insides started writhing as though he'd swallowed live snakes. Doubled up, he wondered whether he was going to be sick. Then, a burning sensation spread rapidly from his stomach to the very ends of his fingers and toes. Next, bringing him gasping to all fours, came a horrible melting feeling as the skin all over his body bubbled like hot wax. And before his eyes, his hands began to grow. The fingers thickened. The nails broadened. The knuckles were bulging like bolts. His shoulders stretched painfully and a prickling on his forehead told him that hair was creeping down toward his eyebrows. His robes ripped at his chest, expanding like a barrel, bursting its hoops. His feet were in agony in shoes, four sizes too small. And suddenly, as it had started, everything stopped.
Excellent. Excellent. The author continues to just blow me.
Right?
Blow my doors off. Just blow my doors off.
My life would be so much more interesting if the author wrote my life.
Yes, I feel like it would be.
Like, rather than just dreamt of naps.
Yeah.
It would be so much nicer written.
Yeah, just much more classy.
Dreams of being a cat in her next life.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be real. I would trade places with Hermione Granger in this story.
So many great naps.
Yes.
Just nap anytime. I read like cats sleep like 14 hours a day. Dude, I don't even know how you do that. I haven't napped. I can tell you the last time I napped. You want to know when it was? The day before our son was born.
That's like as long as I intermittent fast.
That was like 7 years ago.
Right. Oh, you did used to sleep that long. Well, before we get into this episode and jump on into all things Polyjuice and Christmas, we wanted to remind you that you can find a slew of other podcasts of ours at maryandblake.com. And particularly wanted to give you a heads up that if you're a fan of the show This Is Us on NBC, we actually have a companion podcast. We have podcasted about every single episode of that show. Oh. So if you're not necessarily in the mood to like binge all of the previous seasons, you could check out the podcast This Is Us Too. Either find it in your podcast app of choice or go to maryandblake.com. There we'll catch you all on up on all things Pearson as we get ready for October 28th.
October. Well, we will be on October 28th. The show begins October 27th.
Yes. So that is when we will be going live doing things all about This Is Us. And of course, we want to take a moment to thank our friends at jointhenerdclan.com. It is because of you and your patronage that this show keeps going. I know I've talked about it before, but 2020 has just been a weird, funky year. And of course, because of that, our partnerships with sponsors have changed. So our patrons at jointhenerdclan.com, you've made a lot of things possible. We're almost there at having Blake don a Hufflepuff shirt and possibly sing the Huggy Huggy Hogwarts show. And you know, Blake,
what's that?
I've kind of got an idea that I want to mull over with you.
Okay.
Okay, because as a friend to many puffs, I like to call myself a Griffin puff, you know, that's what it really is in my heart. I feel like if we could set a goal for the amount of patrons to not only have you be pretty much Hufflepuff for a day, mm-hmm. but couldn't we maybe add a puff perspective sound to this wee podcast? Or maybe a puff could call in on our voicemail and we can have a puff per podcast give their perspective, and it would be called the Puff Perspective.
Oh.
As a reward for a certain patronage level. It would need to be a patron puff.
Yes.
Can you tell I like alliteration, listeners?
So much great alliteration.
So Blake's going to mull that over. Ponder it, if one may.
We're
going to
ponder the patron
ponder
puff.
Ponder the patron puff perspective. But if you're a puff and you are sick and tired of hearing this Slytherin slather all over your puffy pride, okay?
Mary.
Put a stop to it. Become a patron at jointhenerdclan.com. Oh, after that, let's get into the show.
Let's do it.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Okay, so Harry gets in trouble with Professor Dumbledore, but he's really not in trouble. And in the meantime, he sees Professor Dumbledore's bird die. Ah, but it's a phoenix. Toad's okay. Guess what? It's Christmas time. Yay, tons of presents. You know what we can do? Drink Polyjuice potion, get really weird, okay? And while we go down, we find out that Malfoy is not the heir to Slytherin. And we go back and find out that Hermione is a cat.
And that's it?
Meow.
Yeah, man, this chapter was quite good. I'm not going to lie. I enjoyed this chapter. And the funny thing is, not a ton happens. I mean, well, no, there's stuff that happens.
I was just going to say so much happens
in this chapter. But I mean, nothing like happens of real consequence.
I mean, the fact that they have three desserts.
Well, I mean, obviously.
That's a big deal.
We call that a BFD.
A lot of things happen. A lot of important people are in this chapter. It's Christmas. And we get to do the Polyjuice potion. And this is Harry's first time at Dumbledore's office.
Yes. And the description of Dumbledore's office is also great with all the how it smells and the puffs of smoke and all of the headmasters like sleeping or, not paying it. Like they're in the paintings, but they're not like active. It just reminds you of a really cozy, cool but yet warm environment.
I think I listen to a lot of YouTube ambiance channels that are Harry Potter related. So it's just, musical medleys that are very calming. And I'm pretty sure one of them is Dumbledore's office.
Actually, you're right.
Yeah.
There is one. Yes.
Yeah. It's just, for those of you who haven't tried it, check it out.
It's by the Ambient World, I think.
Yeah. There's one that's like the Gryffindor Common Room. And then there's like Hogwarts with Rain. Mm-hmm. They're really fun. So Harry, while he's here in Dumbledore's office, sees the Sorting Hat.
I have to tell you.
Tell me.
This might be my favorite part of this chapter.
Ooh, yes.
It might be. I think it might be. Hot take. It is my favorite part of this chapter.
Love it. Own it. Let's delve into it.
And I love it because Harry is making a choice, and he's and he's asserting himself. He is making his own fate, kind of like last chapter when he knows, dude, I could run, I could leave, and nobody would see me. Nobody would know I was here, but yet he stays, and he stays because he knows it's the right thing to do. And he stays despite knowing that all of the stuff that's going to be coming after that is going to suck. Like, he knows it's going to be bad. Yeah. And the same thing here. It's not that Harry knows what the Sorting Hat is going to say is going to be bad. It's more along the lines of, Harry has fought this notion of his own fame and his own identity that has been made for him. He's been told ever since he's gotten to the magical world, you're Harry freaking Potter.
Harry freaking Potter.
Oh my goodness. Like, you are the man.
That needs to be a soundbite.
I know. I keep saying it every episode. I keep saying it, and I haven't
we'll
done
get
it yet.
There.
I will. But in this case, and in the Chamber of Secrets, he's starting to make his own choices. You see some choices made by the end of the Sorcerer's Stone, but you really see Harry starting to grapple with this predetermined sense of his own fame and predetermined identity. And this is just a confirmation of that.
Well, and I also think it's just very age appropriate. You know, mm-hmm. He's 12, and at this point he's 12 and a half, because his birthday's in July. So you're thinking about, you know, think of the 12-year-olds in your life or people that you've known. You know, they're starting to be more assertive. They're also starting to question themselves. Sure. And what I think is really interesting at this point in the book, you know, we're halfway through, over halfway through the Chamber of Secrets, Harry still doesn't know for sure that he is not the heir to Slytherin.
Right, right.
You know, like, he knows he's trying to do all the right things. He's trying to get to the bottom of all of this, and it's really driving him nutty trying to think of it, but he is still slightly ashamed of the fact that he's hearing this voice.
Yes.
And, you know, he goes to the Sorting Hat, which is a hat, okay? And this is what he kind of thinks, like, all right, here's my chance.
We move on, I love how this is written.
Do it.
And I have to call it out. Harry stared at the black inside of the hat, waiting. Then a small voice said in his ear, "Be in your bonnet, Harry Potter." Yes, Harry muttered. Sorry to bother you. I wanted to ask, you've been wondering whether I put you in the right house, said the hat smartly. Yes, you were particularly difficult to place, but I stand what I said before. Harry's heart leapt. You would have done well in Slytherin. Mm. Harry's stomach plummeted. He grabbed the point of the hat and pulled it off. It hung limply in his hand, grubby and faded. Harry pushed it back onto its shelf, feeling sick. You're wrong, he said aloud to the still and silent hat. Mm. Oh my goodness gracious, you're wrong. And Harry finally says, no, I am Gryffindor. I am right to be in Gryffindor.
Can you imagine the one thing that could have changed this entire book series is if Harry had agreed with the hat and said, okay, Slytherin's fine.
Yeah, but I think...
If Harry was sorted in Slytherin...
All right, I see what you're saying.
And like from day one, like, I don't really know anything different. Sure. Okay, Slytherin, fine, whatever. I'm going to be great in it. Okay, awesome. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have Ron, Hermione as his friends. He would have probably had Malfoy as his friend. Mm-hmm. Like, how that choice, you know, Dumbledore talks so often about it's the choices that we make.
Right.
How it was Harry's choice to finally put his foot down and say, no, we're going to be in Gryffindor. And yet here he is worried and doubting because so much is intertwined with Slytherin and with the air and with him hearing snakes, which is not particularly great. So Dumbledore does come on in. And this is, of course, though, after Fox burns up. So Harry's just having like all these magical experiences.
Yes.
The hat's talking to him. He's seeing all these portraits. And Fox, the phoenix, bursts out in flames. And he says, Professor, your bird, I couldn't do anything. He just caught fire. And Dumbledore replies, it's about time, too. He's been looking dreadful for days. I've been telling him to get a move on. And this is where frequently this would have been Ron's role.
Oh, yeah.
Of explaining things. Mm-hmm. Because Dumbledore has to explain magical beasts. Unlike Hermione, Harry probably hasn't read and memorized, or unlike our son, I should say, because our son has memorized that book.
Yes, he has.
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Harry would have learned about Fox and would have learned about phoenixes, but Dumbledore has to fill him in on what they are and what they do, and also drops these little breadcrumbs that are important, particularly in this book. You know, for the sense that they can carry immensely heavy loads, their tears have healing powers, and they make highly faithful pets.
And I really need to ask you about this question, Mary, because it feels like Dumbledore is leading Harry down this path to suggest that he needs to be faithful to Dumbledore. Like, yeah, Fox is great because he's faithful. Fox is awesome because he knows where his loyalties lie. And I can't help but sense the fact that Dumbledore is saying it without saying it. He's like, I'm not saying, but I'm just saying. Do you get that sense from Dumbledore?
Yeah, well, I know exactly. Like, tally one more for the Dumbledore train. You know what else is really cool about this moment? And I don't think Dumbledore is aware. The core of Harry's wand, which he has on his possession at this very moment, is a feather from Fox.
Yes, exactly.
His phoenix feather core is Fox's feather.
Yes, exactly.
Which is just so neat.
That is so cool. That is so cool.
You'd think that, like, his wand would be buzzing a little bit, like, mommy.
I love how Fox just bursts into flames. And the way that it's written is, Harry yelled in shock and backed away into the desk. He looked feverishly around at the case where there was a glass of water somewhere, but couldn't see one. The bird, meanwhile, had become a fireball. It gave one loud shriek, and the next second there was nothing but a smoldering pile of ash on the floor. And I love how Harry was just thinking that all he needed was for Dumbledore's pet bird to die while he was alone in the office with it when the bird burst into flames.
Oh, goodness. Think gracious. Of that.
This kid has been through the ringer with all of this stuff, and now Dumbledore's bird dies on.
So about that.
Oh, that's good stuff, man. That is good stuff.
Dumbledore, you know, they're talking a little bit, and Hagrid runs in wearing the what we like to call baklava, but he's still wearing that balaclava, which, can we Google that briefly and find out what a balaclava
is? I will Google it
now. I'm picturing, like, one of those hats that they show people in Russia wearing, the big, like, winter hats.
Oh,
the ones that I always picture people wearing in the movie Anastasia. Love that movie.
No,
Once
it's more like
December.
Well, hold on. Let me see. let me just make sure.
Oh, is it instead like a ski mask thing?
Yes, it's like a ski mask.
What? Like, he's gonna rob somebody? No.
A balaclava, also known as a balaclava helmet or bali or ski mask, is a form of clothing, cloth headgear designed to expose only part of the face.
It's like what people do when they rob a bank.
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
It looks very COVID approved. Oh my goodness.
Oh man, that's funny.
Well, there we go. I was picturing something much more merry and jolly.
No,
so Hagrid comes in. Still wearing this. This makes me see this scene in a very different way now. Hagrid, the half giant, comes in wearing, looking like a thief, walking in, yelling, "It wasn't Harry, Professor Dumbledore. I was talking to him seconds before that kid was found. He never had time, sir." Like, does he take it off?
No, he said it was bunched up on his head or
perched
something.
Perched on top of his head. Okay, good. At least it's like he doesn't look like he's ready to steal Fox or something. And what I love is Hagrid, Dumbledore says, "Hagrid, I don't think Harry attacked those people." So this is a really interesting part. Can we just, like, delve into it? If you have never read Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets before, we're about to spoil some things, okay?
Yes, go ahead.
So Dumbledore knows who opened the Chamber of Secrets last time. It was Tom Riddle, a.k.a. Voldemort. Voldemort framed Hagrid for opening it up 50 years ago. So here's Hagrid, who is freaking out because the Chamber of Secrets is open again. And he was not only expelled, his wand was broken. He was sent to Azkaban as a what? Teenager.
Yes.
I don't know what year he was when this happened, but, like, he was a teenager and was sent to Azkaban wrongfully accused. And now here he is standing up for Harry, when if this was me, I would have skedaddled out of here. I'd have been like, it's open again. I'm not being near here. And Dumbledore knows it's not Harry either. Dumbledore actually knows who it is, because we know this because he said it to Professor McGonagall when Harry was in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And I wish he would say to him, Hagrid, you and I both know who opens it. Like,
yeah,
this is a moment that they understand who it was.
Right.
So it's just weird for me that they're, I mean, I know that we can't.
Yeah, the problem is they can't do that, because if they did, then we would have a much shorter story. So the book demands that.
Like, I just kind of wish there was some like awkwardness, like some Snape, Dumbledore. You know how Snape and Dumbledore have those moments where it's like.
They kind of like look at each other.
Yeah, like I wish there was a little bit of that, but there isn't. So then, you know, Hagrid leaves. And with his rooster, once again, he still has that dead rooster. And Dumbledore considers him. So it says, Harry waited nervously while Dumbledore considered him, the tips of his long fingers together. So I'm wondering, like, is he doing occlumency right now? Is considered him meaning looking into his eyes? Like, if you were to describe what it's like to be considered by somebody.
The way that I would think of it, the way that I interpreted it was, like, looking over, like, yeah, just giving you a little bit of extra
attention.
A little
bit of this. Yeah, like the moon spectacles down.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to try my occlumency, even though I'm not the best at it.
So I don't know if he's reading his mind.
Because it makes sense, because here it goes and he says, I must ask you, Harry, whether there is anything you'd like to tell me, he said gently, anything at all. And then Harry says no.
Yeah, see, you're right. You're right. I like that.
That he's doing some occlumency. He's like, yeah. I know it's not him, but he's got some weird stuff going on in that head, so I'm going to find out what it is.
And I think that's the issue that we have here. We know that...
Rachel Dido is saying, Snape must be like, it must be nice, it must be nice to have Dumbledore on your side.
The thing that we have here is that Harry doesn't know what to say to Dumbledore. And I love how he goes over his whole thing after Fox burning up and just dying in front of him. He goes over his entire emotional crisis that he's having in the Chamber of Secrets, which is all these people think that he's the heir to Slytherin. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know. He's hearing all these voices. And he's casting some serious doubt on him. Plus, he knows everything that's happening with the Polyjuice potion soon. He doesn't want to say that. A lot of people ask, why doesn't he just tell Dumbledore? And that's the thing. He doesn't know who to trust.
Yeah.
He doesn't know if he can trust Hagrid. He doesn't know if he can trust Dumbledore.
I think he knows he can trust Hagrid. I think he would eventually tell Hagrid.
Let me reframe that then. I think Harry is somewhat ashamed then.
And that's where I am too.
And he doesn't want to say it.
Yes.
He doesn't want to say it because it's an acknowledgement of everything that he is afraid of.
And to be honest, I think it just gets worse in this chapter. Like, Ron is excited because they end up finding out, oh, yay, it's not Malfoy, and we found out this dirt on his dad.
Right.
But it's like, okay, shoot, it's still not Malfoy. Mm-hmm. Is it me? You know, I see this as Harry doesn't want to tell Dumbledore because Harry, listen, I do sleep talking. Blake said I was sleep talking last night.
You definitely were.
My son was in bed with us too.
And he had a difficult time. You were sleep talking with him.
Yeah. And Blake said the two of us were having some sleep talking conversations and he had to leave. I woke up, Blake was on the couch and I'm like, what happened? He's like, you guys wouldn't shut up. Harry might be afraid that he's doing this, except with the Chamber of Secrets.
By the way, I just have to call this out. Fox is spelled F-A-W-K-E-S.
Yeah.
Which, okay, there's a natural history here for people in the UK, especially England, with a relation to Guy Fawkes. Guy Fawkes is the guy from on the 5th of November 1605 tried to blow up the House of Lords. And the reason why I bring it up is because Dumbledore says, oh, you should have seen Fawkes on Burning Day. Like, I'm sorry that you didn't get a chance to see that. And there's some history connection here because Guy Fawkes has become kind of celebrated in the UK. He's kind of taken on a whole form of his own. And every 5th of November, they have a burning of an effigy of Guy Fawkes.
Hmm.
And it's like a thing. It's like, okay, Thanksgiving. It's Guy Fawkes Day. It's Burning Fawkes Day. And wow. It's just, and his last name was Fox. Yeah. F-A-W-K-E-S. So I just have to put that out there for
Thank
all my
you,
history dorks.
Major.
You are welcome.
Yay. So we go on out. Harry leaves and everyone's still in a tizzy. They're more concerned about like what happened and nearly had this Nick. So can we just have a moment for Justin Finch Fletchley, who
JFF.
Nobody really cares about.
Don't nobody care about him.
Like everyone's more like, how did here nearly headless Nick become petrified when he's a ghost? And there's a lot of stuff going on. We get a mention of poor Ginny, who's having some issues as well. And then it's Christmas.
Yeah.
Everyone was trying to leave because, of course, the Chamber of Phoenix.
Wow, that's when you've been reading too much Harry Potter.
The Chamber of Secrets is open. Everybody's trying to get on the Hogwarts Express to leave, but all the Weasleys are here
mm-hmm.
because the Weasley family, mom and dad, went
Egypt.
To go
visit,
yes, to
visit
Egypt,
Bill, right?
Which is great because all the Weasleys are here. So, of course, we have the red herring Percy,
yeah.
who still is acting kind of funny.
Hashtag
We've
Percy.
Got Ginny, who is just crying like all the bloody time, the poor thing.
Hold on. Heather Wilson says I should play nerd for myself. I will.
Nerd!
Thank you for that suggestion. Go ahead. Continue.
And then we've got Fred and George, who are having a blast, like bringing Harry around. Make way, heir of Slytherin. Make way, coming through.
And Harry appreciates that.
Yeah.
I like that too. Harry can see the fun in it and the levity in that
exactly.
situation.
Exactly, because it's not like they actually mean it.
Right.
And I just love Christmas with Harry. You know, it's never dull. Never dull. Last year, he got to go see the Mirror of Erised for Christmas.
Yes.
And this Christmas, he becomes, you know, a Slytherin.
And also, the Dursleys have outdone themselves with their gift this year.
Yes.
Last year, they sent him, what was it? It was five pence. I forget what it was.
Oh, they upped the ante this time.
Oh, this time it was much more valuable.
Yes.
It was a
toothpick. They had sent Harry a toothpick and a note telling him to find out whether he'd be able to stay at Hogwarts for the summer vacation, too. Imagine getting that, a toothpick.
And a question I have here is Malfoy stays at the school too for Christmas.
Yes.
Is there, I don't think that there was an explicit explanation on why he stayed and thus why Crabbe and Goyle stayed, because they always emulate what he does.
Yeah. So Crabbe and Goyle always just follow Malfoy around. You know, I think Mumsy and Dadsy went on a holiday.
Perhaps. And actually, I think I might take Malfoy's
perspective
on this.
Good.
So I'm going to withhold some commentary
on that. I dig that. Hagrid, of course, continues to keep his bakery in action as he sent a tin of treacle fudge, which Harry softens by the fire. Ron gives a fantastic book about Quidditch, and Hermione gives a luxury ego feather quill. Mm-hmm. Ms. Weasley gives him a new sweater, and I loved this. Harry read Mrs. Weasley's card with a fresh surge of guilt, thinking about Mr. Weasley's car and about the bout of rule breaking he and Ron are playing next. And what I think is so interesting in this chapter is Hermione recently has been all about the rule breaking.
Yes.
You know, which is very foil to what she was like in the previous book.
Yes.
And Ron is actually the one that is timid in this chapter.
He
drips it in like he's nervous about it. And, I don't think it's that he doubts Hermione. I think it's that he's nervous about getting in trouble. Like,
sure.
Harry doesn't, the Dursleys don't care if he doesn't get in trouble. Hermione's parents probably don't even know what's going on.
Definitely.
So, whatever. They're fine. And Hermione, as she said, is like top of her class. She'll be fine. It will just be her first strike. But Ron is on thin ice. So as you read his trepidation in this chapter, you have to keep that in mind that, like, he feels the odd one out in his family to begin with,
right.
But now he's really hurt his family. Even so more so, I mean, this is before we even get the notice that Malfoy shows them while they are in the Slytherin common room,
mm-hmm.
the inquiry at the Ministry of Magic in the Daily Prophet that Arthur Weasley was fined 50 galleons for bewitching a muggle car. These are the people who in the beginning of this book like had to clean out the cobwebs from their bank.
Right.
And he's now fined 50 galleons.
Which is not a small amount of money. It's not a huge amount of money, but you know what?
For the Weasleys it is.
But, you know, it's it's something that is important, mm-hmm. you know? And the way that it looks to me is that the Ministry of Magic knows that he didn't do really anything wrong. Like they have to give him a little bit of the business, but they know that he didn't, because they could have said, "All right, you lose your job. That's it. You're out."
Yeah.
So it feels like a little bit of a
slap on the wrist,
an acknowledgement, like, okay, we know what we got to do here.
But if this was any other family, we wouldn't be feeling like as gut punched. But mm-hmm. this is a family that we know is very poor.
Yes.
So before the boys are in the common room. I loved this part. So Harry and Ron have barely finished their third helping of Christmas pudding when Hermione ushered them out of the hall to finalize their plans for the evening. "We still need a bit of the people you're changing into," said Hermione matter-of-factly, as though she were sending them to the supermarket for laundry detergent. "Oh, yes, we still need a little bit of the people you're changing into. Don't forget."
Yeah, just go on, get that. Have some fun.
Oh, my goodness.
And Crabbe and Goyle are just the worst. Mm-hmm. They just take random food, just sitting there. They're like, "Oh, looks like nobody's eating this."
I mean, that's pretty much what our son does.
That's true.
I know a lot of people, very particularly true. Of this age. I mean, our son's not even of this age. When he is, we'll have to watch out. We'll have to be like, if it's on the floor and you don't know where it came from, don't eat it.
Don't eat
it. But do you remember people in junior high who just ate random food?
Yeah. All the time.
So like, yeah, we can easily laugh at these people, but we can believe it. You know, I have to admit something.
What's that?
In my sixth grade yearbook, which I need to show you and find, there's a picture of the lunchroom. I'm in this picture. Reaching into someone else's lunchbox. That wasn't why the photo was shared. It was just like, a day in the life and like pictures of kids. But you see me in the background reaching into someone's lunchbox because my parents, I think at that point, were going through the cabbage soup diet phase. So like all I got was remnants of cabbage soup.
There's no chance you were eating normal food.
No. My entire childhood.
That of the lentils.
Oh, yeah. Then they went through the lentil phase. So I'm like reaching into. So I feel for Crabbe and Goyle. I don't know what their parents feed them at home, but if they're eating like this, their parents may be on the cabbage soup diet as well.
Because they could lose a few LBs.
Hey.
They could lose a few LBs. I'm not going to lie.
They are stocking up for a summer of starvation. So these guys in general giant. And I love that Harry and Ron have the foresight when the Crabbe and Goyle are knocked out to take their shoes.
Right.
Because they know that their feet are going to be too small. Like, I would have not realized that. I would have been so excited that it actually worked.
Wouldn't it be more natural to take all their clothes? I mean, they're essentially roofieing these guys. Might as well take all their stuff.
Yes, but Hermione ends up having extra robes for them.
Oh, yeah, that's probably... It would probably be inappropriate for the author to put in, "Oh, yeah, we just left them naked, in the closet. Yeah.
I'm pleased. I'm somewhat thankful and yet concerned or questioning why there wasn't an odoriferous adjective when they took off their shoes.
Oh, good point.
You know, like I feel like she
I feel
was
like
having
they would smell.
The author was just having so much fun describing things. And I'm like, they took off their shoes, but there was no smell whatsoever to it.
Oh, man.
So they go on in, and I loved the color changing of the potions.
Yes, right.
You know, Goyle's, for example, turned a khaki color of booger. And then Harry gulped that down in two glasses. Here's a major difference, though, in this chapter versus the movie. So if you've only been a movie person or if you haven't reread this for quite some time, he realized... So he can't, you know, he doesn't need the glasses because he can't see it. He can see fine because he has Goyle's eyes. But then Goyle's low rasp of a voice issued from his mouth.
Yeah, big difference. Huge difference.
Yeah, came the deep grunt of Crabbe from his right. So in books, when you take Polyjuice Potion, the person's voice is the same.
Yes.
As the original person's.
In the film.
For the most part in the film, when it's the children who are polyjuicing, it does not change. However, in book 4, Mad-Eye Moody, even though he's polyjuiced, is still his same voice.
His voice changes. Now, what do you think about that? What do you think?
I think that was just
Is that
easy.
Just a matter of convenience?
Yes.
We need to have this, and it adds tension
for Mad Eye Moody to be different. Yeah, because I think they needed to have the different voice for us in a movie so that we were reminded, this is not Harry, this is not Ron.
Right.
You know, we needed that voice perspective. But for those of you who haven't listened to the audiobooks, if you've just read the physical books, Jim Dale, who narrates these books, mm-hmm. he reads these paragraphs in Crabbe and Goyle's voice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So even though it's Harry and Ron and Hermione, they all have different voices mm-hmm. than they've had in the past. And I just thought that that was really cool. And it's a fun difference between this and the books, is knowing the voice bit.
Sure, right. And I wish they kind of kept that correct in the films. And I hate to say correct, because it's not fair to say correct, but I wish they kept it consistent in the films. Mm. Like, what I suppose they could maybe make an argument in the films that what's his name, the guy who turns into Mad-Eye, mm-hmm. Barty Crouch, he does a better
Junior.
He does a better job with the Polyjuice potion.
Say it, Barty Crouch. Junior!
he does a better job with the Polyjuice Potion than the kids do, so maybe that voice aspect of it comes along with the Polyjuice Potion.
It's just for ease of movie.
I would agree. I'm just trying to make excuses for the film.
It is fun how Harry clears Ron for how he's walking. Don't swing your arms like huh? Crab holds them sort of stiff. How's this? Yeah, that's better.
Yeah.
And then they're going down to the dungeon, and they're constantly checking their watches to see how much time they have left. Let's take a moment.
Sure.
Watches. What kind of watches do wizards wear? Do they wear muggle watches?
Oh, that's a good question.
Right?
Do they wear digital watches? Because digital watches were big by this point.
Yeah.
Like the ones, you know, when you hit the Timex and you hit the button to turn green.
I don't think they would have one of those. Even though that would have been useful as they were going downstairs into the dungeons, it could have lit their way.
Yes, exactly.
But we get to see these really cool different clocks. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Like, are watches really different or are they pretty basic? And where do you get your watches?
Yeah, is it like something you get like at a muggle store?
Yeah.
Or is there like just a watch store?
And is time just time? Like, I mean, I assume it's all normal because just like the days of the year and everything.
Or is it wizarding time? Like the one that Molly has. Like, okay, you're late.
Yeah.
Is it like something like that? Or does it change with your needs? Like, okay, you have an appointment here in 15 minutes.
And is Harry wearing a muggle watch, but Ron wearing a wizard watch? Because Harry probably had a muggle watch ever since he was, you know, raised at home.
Sure. Rachel says this is the 90s, so it could have been one of those Happy Meal watches.
Yes. I loved this line. Draco Malfoy was strolling towards them because, of course, they bump into Percy while they're in the dungeon.
Another great red herring, by the way. Thank you so much.
Lumos is trying to read your book. Draco Malfoy was strolling towards them, and for the first time in his life, Harry was pleased to see him. Malfoy, of course, he then says, he points out Percy. You know, you're talking about the red herring.
Sure.
Yep. And he says, I've seen him sneaking around a lot lately, and I bet I know what he's up to.
Does he call him Peter? Yeah, he calls him Peter.
The Weasleys just don't get a break when it comes to their names.
Yeah.
I've noticed him sneaking around a lot lately. I bet he knows what he's up to. He thinks he's going to catch Slytherin's heir single-handedly.
Percy in this, I think, is done a little dirty in this book, throughout the book, though it does obviously get explained what he's been up to. But as dirty as he's been done, I think in this chapter, Hermione might be done a little bit more dirty.
See, I don't see Percy being done dirty. I see Percy as an RA.
Well, no, the way that I look at it is like he is just used for the sake of plot. Just to put you in a position to think that he might be the heir to Slytherin.
I gotta tell you, honey, as an RA myself, I stumbled upon...
Hold on.
Nerd!
Okay, continue.
Yes. A proud RA. And those of you who are RAs listening, you know that this is the truth. Because you have to do so many rounds, which I feel like the prefects had to do, especially over holiday...
Sure.
You bump into the weirdest stuff. Like, you don't mean to walk into these things. You don't mean to get yourself into these situations and to be caught like this.
Yes.
But there are some weird things.
You do.
Oh my God. One of the worst things I walked into was the swim team shaving their legs before a meet.
Oh.
I can't unsee that.
No, you cannot. That is not great.
Because swimmers grow
Bob.
Their hair until it's like the big meet.
Oh, it's gross.
Because they want the friction to slow them down while they practice. It's like baseball batters practicing swinging with weights on their bats.
Yes.
But it's hair on their legs. Can't unsee that. Continue.
All set.
So my heart goes out to Percy because all Percy is trying to do is do the right thing. This entire book, he's just trying to do the right thing.
No, he's snogging with what's her name. That ain't the right thing.
Penelope Clearwater?
Yes, exactly.
Why is that not the right thing?
Because that's like not the
16.
Right thing as an RA.
He's like 16. Oh, please.
I'm just saying.
It's not in his house. He's fine.
Yeah, Hermione, I feel like, has done a little dirty in this chapter.
Why?
Because the way that I look at it is that there's no room for her to operate in this chapter. So the author needed an excuse to have Hermione be elsewhere doing something else.
Yeah.
And she put them in a cage. The author put her in a cage, like Lost style.
Yeah.
And they don't have any more room to do. They have no more story for that person. Okay. It's okay. Go in the cages. Season 3, Sawyer, Jack, and Kate.
I'm fine with it because Crabbe and Goyle are always who are with Malfoy and who really Malfoy opens up to. You don't see Millicent and him opening up to. So I kind of feel like she would have been a third wheel.
That's what I'm saying. So is there a better option for Hermione at this point where she makes
the potion?
She could
have been lookout.
She could have. I think she could have been a little bit more involved in this. Though I will say, Hermione turning into a cat is
so good.
I think the consequence for them doing this.
Yes.
And this is what makes them learn, ooh, can't mess with magic too much.
Well, and she was the one who this was her idea, and she's the one that's been fearless. So
right.
I'm happy that it came to her because it is karma.
Right. It puts her back on, you know, like a little bit of a, okay, watch what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because if you don't pay attention, like I love too how Harry and Ron were nervous about what was going to go down. And Hermione was the one's like, oh yeah, it's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. This is going to be great. And she's like, oh yeah, I got this hair. She was wrestling with me. It's going to be fine. I put it in there. We're going to turn to Millicent. I know she ain't that pretty looking, but it's going to be okay.
Because imagine, had something gone wrong with either Harry or Ron, they would have been like, Hermione, why did I let you talk me into this? What did you do wrong, Hermione? What,
right.
You know, so for it to happen to her, I think is the only way that could have happened. When we're with Malfoy, something really important gets said while we're with Malfoy. down in the Slytherin common room.
Okay.
He says, you know, Goyle, I haven't. How many times do I have to tell you I don't know who the heir of Slytherin is? Mm-hmm. And Father won't tell me anything about the last time the chamber was opened either.
Yep.
Of course, it was 50 years ago, so it was before his time, but he knows all about it. And he says that it was all kept quiet, and it'll look suspicious if I know too much. But I know one thing. Last time the Chamber of Secrets was opened, a mudblood died. So here he's saying, my dad knows everything about the Chamber of Secrets. And granted, that could just be Lucius Malfoy blowing smoke. But we know it's not true. We know that Lucius Malfoy knows that Tom Riddle, Voldemort, opened the Chamber of Secrets. And we know so much that he needed to get the book, the diary, into the school.
Right.
Because it was going to open the Chamber of Secrets. And we know all of this because Dobby is their house elf. Dobby knows the chamber. He like says the words, the Chamber of Secrets. Dobby knows book, aka Tom Riddle's diary, equals opening Chamber of Secrets. Meaning Lucius Malfoy knows diary equals opening Chamber of Secrets.
Right.
And he's sending it in. So he knows all about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't tell Malfoy, because he doesn't want Malfoy to be suspicious.
Yeah, I'm gonna withhold my comments on this.
All right.
And what you're saying here, Mary, is very important. But I'm gonna comment on that in a little bit. So
We do get one little thing that they have a secret chamber under the drawing room soap floor, which comes into use later in book 7. A little Easter egg there, but Ron enjoys that bit of knowledge as well, and he's going to tell his dad. That's right, that's right. And last but not least, the boys take Hermione to Madame Pomfrey, and I loved this bit from Harry. We'll take you to the hospital wing, Hermione. Madame Pomfrey never asks too many questions. And what a great nurse Madame Pomfrey is.
Just show up with, you know, no bones. Okay. Show up with slugs coming out of your mouth.
I'm not going to ask how this happens.
Just, it's here. We're dealing with it. Let's move forward.
Well, it's like what we were dealing with in book one when Ron got bit by a dragon.
Right.
Or scratched by the dragon.
She didn't ask.
No.
It's kind of like The Godfather 2 with what's his name? Oh, Hyman Roth.
Okay.
I didn't ask any questions when I went into this business.
No. Nope. You know, it would make her job a lot easier.
This is the business we've chosen. It always goes back to The Godfather.
Always.
Always.
I do love Madame Pomfrey. Shout out for the Madame Pomfreys in the world.
HIPAA certified or HIPAA compliant.
That's what Harry should have said.
Get your HIPAA compliant shirt, by the way, at the Mary and Blake store. You're welcome.
Like, once again, right? Very appropriate. Don't worry, Hermione, that you look like a cat. HIPAA. And there's Ron. What's HIPAA? It's a muggle thing.
HIPAA. I love how that joke keeps coming back.
Thanks to Madame Pomfrey and her HIPAA compliance.
Man. All right, Marvin. Are you ready to do the different perspective? Yes, absolutely. Okay, let's do it. I want to remind you guys, thank you so much for everybody at jointhenerdclan.com. It is our official community. So please, if you do find value in all the things that we do here, and you love what we have to say, and you love everything that goes on at Mary and Blake.
Or even if you hate what we have to say, but you love to tune in and yell at us.
Exactly. Please go to jointhenerdclan.com. Become an official member there. We get all kinds of cool swag and extra premium podcast episodes and bonus stuff and Mary's famous version of Crazy by Britney Spears to the style of Harry Potter and Moaning Myrtle. It is there. It is up there for you to consume.
You're welcome.
And everybody loved it. Everybody. So if you want to hear that.
That's what happens when I babysit.
Go to jointhenerdclan.com and check it out there. Mary, are you ready to do this?
Yes.
Let's get it done, shall we?
Yes.
Holy cricket! You're Harry Potter! I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
I'm going to be Malfoy in this one.
Draco Malfoy.
Draco Malfoy. And, you know, normally we reserve this, you know, for being funny and we have a good time with this. But in this case, I'm going to be a little bit more serious.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I know normally we are funny, but this is important.
Okay.
And I have to...
Raise a glass to Malfoy.
There's a lot of things happening with Malfoy in this. With me, okay? With me.
Okay, Draco.
And
what's going on?
I'm not a good person.
Draco, don't say that about yourself.
I'm not a good person. I'm the one that's saying I could help the heir of Slytherin, and I wish, you know, I know it's gonna be Granger who dies, probably because I like her a little. I like her a little bit.
Okay.
I feel like she
am I your therapist? Am I like Madame Pomfrey? Are we having a talk right now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Is this HIPAA?
If we're HIPAA compliant.
All right, HIPAA
this
compliant.
Doesn't leave the room.
All right, good.
Doesn't leave the wing.
So I feel like, you know, I want all this stuff to happen.
What, honey?
I want the Chamber of Secrets to open, and I want to be a part of it. I want to be a part of it because I want my dad to be proud of me.
Hmm.
Now, this is me, Blake, talking. I have a very contentious relationship with my father. Most of you know that. Some of you do not.
Welcome to our life.
I know. And in contentious, I mean my dad doesn't talk to me, which is his choice. It is what it is. But I feel for Malfoy in this. Even though he's not a good person, even though he has... very little sympathy, especially since the Slytherin password is pure blood, by the way. He's making fun of Ron's dad. He's saying he's unfit, but he keeps talking about his dad. Now, I'm back to Malfoy now. And, you know, my dad.
Yes.
All my life, my dad's told me that I'm special. All my life, my dad told me that we have a plan. You're going to be the man. You're going to be somebody. You're going to be comfortable, and you're going to be what every Malfoy is. You are special. In fact, so much that he's ingrained in me that all the mudbloods out there are below me.
Okay.
And I live in that shadow. I live in that shadow, and it's hard. It's hard to live up to those expectations. It's hard to be with myself and be the version of myself that my dad wants me to be. Mm. And not only that, my dad says, you're going to be special. But when it comes down to the entire thing with the Chamber of Secrets, and it comes down to how this thing gets opened and the heir is revealed and all the mudbloods die and the school turns into pure blood and the plan goes forward, you know what I get?
What?
Nothing. I get told, just shut up. Shut up. Wait for it. Let daddy do all the work here. I'm not going to include you in on anything. I don't want you to know anything. Just sit by and wait.
Must be very hard.
And it's hard because I want to do the right thing. I want to be the person that my dad wants me to be. I want to be everything that that a Malfoy should be, but I'm not given a chance to do it. I'm just told, shut up, sit there, and wait.
You'll have your moment, Draco.
But that's the thing. I have to live up to that. And now, me, Blake, talking. The reason why I feel for this is because that's basically my life.
Oh my God.
That's the truth. And sorry for the want part of it, but it's the truth.
You just went there.
I did. I work with my dad. I do. And a lot of that rings true to me. So while I know that Draco is not a good kid, and I know
he's 12,
he is making poor choices, saying the wrong things, I do know that I don't think that this is him. I don't think what he's saying is something that he truly believes. Or at least he's convinced himself that he believes it, but he really doesn't. Because he's just trying to be the version of himself that his dad, that he thinks his dad wants him to be.
What do you think his dad is doing on Christmas holiday?
And that's another thing too. Back to Malfoy. My dad's off at freaking Christmas.
Yeah.
Hey, I got to stay here with all these people that are below me. That's another thing that my dad's making me do. What are we doing here? I don't want to be with these people. I want my I want all my presents.
They're in Mallorca.
They're
holidaying in Mallorca.
So I feel like Draco in this instance, yes, not great, Bob. But I also understand it.
Gotcha.
I see where he's coming from. I feel that conflict. I feel like Star Wars. I feel the conflict within you, Father. I feel like that's what's happening.
It's so sad that Dobby knows more than Draco does.
Yes. And it's just like, come on, man. Like, make him part of the process. And like, I know you don't want to make a 12-year-old part of the process, but this kid is...
But Draco hasn't proved his worth to his dad. So his dad isn't like ready for him to be on that level.
Yeah,
it's
but
actually, Voldemort.
You're never giving him a chance. You're not even doing anything
Lucius
to allow him to do it.
Lucius never gives him a chance.
That's what I'm saying.
Voldemort eventually gives him a chance.
That's
how crazy is that?
Yeah, that's yeah, and that is why it's easy to hate Malfoy. It really is. Again, you know, I mean, just not great, Bob.
Not great, Bob.
Do you want to know something?
What?
I read something where people were tallying up the amount of minutes on screen that the characters had in the movies.
That.
Malfoy, out of all of the movies, was only on screen for 31 minutes.
Yes. That says a lot, by the way. It says a lot about a character. If he's that memorable.
Yes.
And he has that much depth in a film for only appearing in 31 minutes out of a group of films that are 16, 17...
Yeah.
Let's round it up and say 20 hours. And they only allow him 31 minutes, and you remember that much about him, and he is that distinct, great character.
Awesome.
Great character.
Right. Time for our email.
All right. Let's do it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you are listening to this on the podcast app, that's okay. You're not alone. You're not left out of the show. You can join us by sending an email, and then we will get to it next episode. But if you're watching this on the live with us on all of the social media, we're pointing to you. You know who you are. Please do send us some questions in the chat. Just make sure that you put a little lightning emoji next to your question so that way we know it's a question. All right, Marvin, let's do it.
All right.
Oh, Miles here.
So, we have a couple of emails. Let's get to them, shall we?
We shall.
This one comes from Paulina. She says, hello, Mary and Blake. Greetings from Mallorca.
What?
Just kidding. I'm just some miles away. She's in beautiful Barcelona.
Oh, nice.
I've been listening to your podcast for a couple of years now. I discovered you through an Outlander Facebook group, and you've made me discover the amazing series like This Is Us and The Leftovers.
You stole my heart.
Oh, that one's close to my heart. And you made me even watch The Gilmore Girls. And I can only regret about the fact that I didn't know about ParentCast when I had my now 5-year-old.
Oh, we're twinsy ages.
She has a suggestion for us. Whenever we decide to do a giveaway, you could use a drop of Blake's hilarious impression of Lockhart in Flourish and Blotts free of charge.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
I think that's a good idea. Here's her question, though. Why had nobody asked Moaning Myrtle about her attacker? We know that Dumbledore was a professor in her time. The girl has been haunting the toilets for decades. Dumbledore could have easily arrived at the conclusion that the assassin was the basilisk and not Aragog, which at least might have helped Hagrid. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for everything. You have no idea how much joy you bring to us all. Love you guys. Marvin, what do you think?
I don't think Moaning Myrtle was haunting the grounds very soon after.
Okay.
So I don't think they would have been able to ask her.
Yeah.
Like shortly after death, when they would have been on the hunt for, you know, was it Aragog? Was it someone else? I don't think Moaning Myrtle was there right away. I'm going to research that. That is an excellent question. I think Dumbledore knew it was Tom Riddle all along.
Sure. Okay.
I don't think he was headmaster at that time. Dumbledore, I believe, wasn't headmaster at that time.
Okay.
So it wouldn't have been up to him if Hagrid was expelled or not. It would have been whoever that headmaster is. Okay. But I will find out if Moaning Myrtle was haunting
them. I will vamp. The next question comes from Monique. She says, hey there, guys. Last week, you guys were asking what a balaclava is because Hagrid was wearing one in Chapter 11. In case somebody from the UK hasn't already chimed in, it's like one of those woolly ski masks that cover your whole head and face except for the eyes and mouth. I have the UK versions of the books too, and it's fun to see how they translate.
Yay.
Thank you for providing some lumos in this time of knock. Well, Monique, you're welcome. Thank you for educating us. Unfortunately, we went to the Google mobile before we got to your email, but I do appreciate the thought. Thank you so much for thinking of us.
Moaning Myrtle actually was a Ravenclaw and student at Hogwarts in 1943 when she was killed by the Basilisk from the Chamber of Secrets. So it does not say that she saw Tom Riddle. Okay. So just as that she saw the Basilisk, she'd been hiding in the bathroom because she was being teased by some broad named Olive Hornby. Mm-hmm. When she heard someone come in and heard that person speaking, she realized it was a boy. So she opened the stall to tell him to go to the girls' bathroom, only to find herself face to face with a basilisk. It was hours before anyone found her body, and her body was actually, her murder was used to create the Diary Horcrux.
Oh, okay.
After her death, Myrtle decided to haunt Olive Hornby to make her pay for teasing her, and then followed her around until the ministry had her to step in and stop her. Then she decided to return to the site of her death, a toilet which she's haunted ever since, crying and splashing water. Bop, 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 bop.
All right, great. Allison chimes in. She says, you suppose Malfoy's dad kept him out of it to keep him safe because he seemed to do a lot of Voldemort's bidding under incredible duress. What do you think about that, Mary?
I would think that it was his mother, Narcissa, who would have been like, please don't get him involved. We don't need to talk about this in front of him. We don't need to talk about the diary in front of him. Please, please, please. Mm-hmm. Just let Malfoy watch, you know, the Kratz brothers.
The Kratz brothers. Suzanne says, I don't understand the thing with Percy. What is going on with him in this book? I am lost. Care to amplify, Mary?
So, Suzanne, I think we're supposed to be led to feel like Percy's the one wandering around the castle. He's in all these places where attacks are happening. He's acted very differently and frequently gleeful when it doesn't necessarily make sense. Mm-hmm. So he is supposed to be the one that we're like, oh, maybe it's Percy. And eventually we're going to keep going down that route. Mm-hmm. Really, Percy's just in love and loving life right now as a prefect.
Yes, he's too busy snogging.
Heather Wilson says, what pudding dessert would you go back for 3 servings? Assuming, of course, magical 0 calories. For me, it would be chocolate mousse, says Heather. Ooh. Blake, what would you do 3 servings of?
Chocolate layer cake from Greg's.
Ooh, delicious.
Oh, yes. Just, you know, if you're watching this from somewhere else other than Rhode Island and Massachusetts.
We're sorry.
We are very sorry for you. Yes. Very. But do yourself a favor and go to just Google Greg's restaurant. Yeah. And it's Greggs, hashtag not a sponsor. And just look at the amazing cakes.
So good.
They're just, and they're everything about them just makes your life want to just sparkle.
Agree.
You know, like Edward Cullen style.
Yes.
How about you, Marvin? What do you think?
I love pie. And I tell myself that I can eat multiple servings of it because it's generally like a fruit or vegetable based pie. So I can easily down 3 servings of pumpkin pie. You know I can.
I'm so out on pumpkin.
I know you are, but
pumpkin sucks.
And it means there's more for me. Caitlin Marie says, do you think Snape feels a specific responsibility to find the heir and about the Chamber of Secrets since he is the head of Slytherin?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's a fabulous question because, like, where is Snape right now? What is he doing?
Because he's eating some fish food. That's what he's doing.
He is.
He's in
Maybe
his room.
Some pie.
With a picture of Lily. Just eating fish food.
Oh my gosh, what does he do on Christmas? That's what he does.
He's like that Emma Stone gif where she's just eating all the ice cream and
listening to the Michael Bublé Christmas album.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
He's scratching his head, not understanding what the heck is going on.
Could you imagine?
Oh,
could you imagine
Snape
listening to Michael Bublé? Although at the time in the mid-90s, it probably would have been like Harry Connick Jr.
Oh, yes.
Yes, he would be a Harry. I think Snape's a Harry Connick Jr.
Guy. Oh my God, so secret. Like he hides his Discman in an old cauldron. Yes.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
Oh, yes.
We figured it out.
Yep, he's totally a Harry Connick Jr. guy. That's my new... Sure, you're welcome for that.
You're welcome.
You got any other questions?
That's it. That was
I think Caitlin, yes. I think Snape probably does feel some responsibility because he is the head of the Slytherin house. Though, how much?
I think he knows that the current student population are dim-witted, like, meh.
Yeah.
So,
dim-witted ninny muggins.
Yeah. And this is where they would have really benefited to having a teacher's lounge where maybe he could sit down and be like, so, Dumbledore,
yeah,
Harry's hearing voices. I know this because I can do acclimency very well. What are we doing about this? You know, like, I think Snape knows it's nobody in his house. And not his pay grade, okay?
Way above his pay grade.
Way above his pay grade. He's got enough issues to deal with. He's got plans this weekend, okay? It's called Hallmark Movies, Harry Connick Jr., and eating Ben and Jerry's.
Leave me
alone.
You know that Snape, when Independence Day came out, you know he was the first guy to go buy a ticket to go see Harry Connick Jr. fly with Will Smith. You know that was, he's like, oh, dude, HCJ in Independence Day? Yep, I'm in.
All right, let's wrap this up.
Oh gosh. Okay, let's do it. Yes. All right. Let's get her done. What?
That's what I said like a minute ago.
I know. I'm just making sure that there's no other questions. I'm making sure that everything is on the up and up here. I'm trying to run the show.
I'm your co-pilot.
You are my co-pilot. You're the best co-pilot on the planet. It's my girl.
Got you, boo.
Let's do it.
Thank you all so incredibly much for tuning in to this episode of the Potterverse. Whether you joined us live on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, or you're joining us through the podcast app, know that any way, shape, or form you listen is awesome. And we're so thankful. And if you wanted to ever let other people know how you feel about the Potterverse, you can head it over to your podcast app. The one that we really recommend is iTunes. You can leave a podcast review there. 5 stars, write a review. It helps people learn about the podcast. I've actually noticed an uptick in how many listeners we get when we get more reviews.
Yes, absolutely. So, and by the way, know too that we did give away something from the Mary and Blake store for all the reviewers between 60 and 70. We will do the same for one person between 70 and 80. So a free item from the Mary and Blake store of any of your choice if you are one of the reviewers between 70 and 80. So we'll put it that way.
Thank you all so much. For now, my name's Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.
Heute ist alles anders. Nachdem wir gestern erfahren haben, dass Außerirdische schon lange versuchen, uns zu kontaktieren. Die Reaktionen sind positiv. Abgesehen von ein paar Milliardären, die als erstes im All wohnen wollten. Im Mittelpunkt der Geschehnisse eine Squarespace-Website, mit der die Außerirdischen ihre Anwesenheit ankündigten. Jetzt wissen wir, dass im All das Gleiche gilt wie auf der Erde. Eine Website macht es möglich. Squarespace. Nutze den Angebotscode UFO und sichere dir 10% Rabatt auf dein neues Website-Abo.